Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
It's unfortunate that I am in Little Rock by myself. Noah and I had planned some excursions out to the local sports card shop. We were going to celebrate the two-year anniversary, Noah, of the podcast, which we started here in Little Rock, and yet there you are on your couch in New York, resting a bum ankle.
We have a podcast?
Yeah, I've actually, the last 2 years, I've been recording every conversation we have. It's weird, isn't it?
I've just been venting about shit. Wait, this is like live?
Yeah, people actually, well, there's at least three people that listen.
That's exciting. One of them's my grandmother. Yeah, no, definitely disappointing. You know, I think we all, it's not a secret, I'm kind of in this limbo stage, a little bit of you know, uncertainty. And I think that comes, you know, when talking about my ankle, I think I rushed it. I think I kind of put myself in a spot where I was like, here I am, I'm ready enough, I want to play, I don't want to miss out on opportunities, where I had the same injury, and it took me 6 months to recover from it, and this was 3.5. So, actually, 3. So, you know, just like that, is you kind of put yourself in that position where probably not fully mentally ready, and it is what it is. So, as much as I would love to be sitting on your lap, mm-hmm. That's it. As much as I,
you didn't have a follow up, did you? Yeah, you're.
I didn't really. Yeah. As much as I would have loved to be there with them, and you know, in person with our next guest as well, it's just the best play for me. It's really difficult. I can't play on a hard court for sure. And if I can't do that, can I really play tennis? I don't even know.
I mean, I don't know if you really can, even whether you could slide. So
that's exciting news.
I genuinely was really excited about this because of the fact that it was 2 year anniversary of our podcast here in Little Rock is where we started, because we had three rainout days here in mm-hmm. Little Rock 2 years ago. So we had nothing else to do except sit with each other because we were across the hallway, if memory serves, here at the, I'm not even going to say the name of the hotel, because there were toenail clippings when I checked in, just laying on the floor of my room, which is, again, just terrifying. But, you know, I miss you. I genuinely do miss you. I'm sad to not get to watch you play. I really am sad. You're going to be in Tulsa in a couple weeks. Just training a little bit and just hanging out. So we'll do something fun then, right?
Yeah, I mean, you put us together and absolutely nothing exciting happens.
It's just, it's electric. My child is so excited to see you. She is so, so excited. Although I have to tell you, we got some tadpoles recently. We went down to the tennis court, our tennis court that was flooded again, and I was able to get some tadpoles. She named one after her favorite tennis player. Jamie Loeb.
Yeah.
So one of our five tadpoles is named Jamie. Did you just call my child a piece of shit? What did you just do? Who did you just call a piece of shit?
Don't stutter here. Also, you're making mistakes. Why all these strange reptiles in your life?
Listen, we my daughter now wants to be a veterinarian, much like your lovely girlfriend is going to be.
She would tell you that's a mistake as well.
I'm going to encourage it as much as I can. But the point being, I miss you. It would be nice to have you here, and hopefully we get you returning to the tour very soon.
Me like the rest of the Twittersphere. I think we're excited to hear that golden voice again.
Yeah, and let me just say this: obviously Little Rock here, and then Orlando the next week. It's up against the French Open, and I realize it's not going to be number one priority. But please know, if you are bored by Tennis Channel coverage, you can hop over to the Tennis Channel Podcast Network host Mike Cation, because we will be with you in Little Rock and Orlando all day, all night for the next couple weeks. And frankly, I love it. I'm excited about it. And I miss you. Our guest this week is going to be Jason Jung, a guy who has just been in the top 150 for the last 5 years, originally from Torrance, California, now playing for Taiwan under the Taiwanese flag. We'll talk a little bit about that. Both of you guys are about the same stature, pretty close to about 6 foot-ish for both of you, right? In that range?
9 inches away from 6 feet.
Which 9 inches?
And our next guest.
So here's our conversation with Jason Jung. So this is a difficult week for both myself and our guest this week, Jason Jung. It's very rare that we have a challenger at the same time as the first week of a Grand Slam, Jason. I would love to be at the Slams myself. How are you dealing with it, preparing for this week here in Little Rock, seeing some of these guys that you kind of come up with and are in the first round of challengers as well? Now they're in the first round of the French.
It's probably one of the most difficult things when you play qualifying and you lose in qualifying, and then you leave and you watch all the first round matches. I try not to look at results after I lose. It's just... You like to see guys that you grew up with do well, but at the same time, it's kind of tough because you want to be there too.
Are you locked in for this week? Where's your mindset?
Yeah, so I'm pretty locked in right now. It's been a tough year, to be honest. I came back from a hip injury. I started end of February, so it was a bit of a late start, and the physical part hasn't been there yet, and I honestly haven't won that much, so it's tough. But the physical part is getting there, and with that, the game will follow. So hopefully the game will follow.
I think, and actually going back to kind of what Mike was talking about, Stanford Foster was the first person that told me this, and this was kind of after my first Australian Open. He's like, the test for you will be going back to challengers. You know, how does that feel going back to a challenger? So that was kind of the test. And I think for us, talking about motivation right after COVID is that topic of discussion. You know, even though you look like you're the same age as me, you are a little bit older.
Well put.
It's the beard, you know, can you grow one, by the way?
I actually tried to go a stash the last 3 weeks, and it just did not look good. It's just like long strands of hair, and I gave up on it.
That actually might be the turning point for you. It's just a thought, but so for you right now, you know, after, you know, a tough kind of beginning of the season, where does your mind go to get you in game mode?
That's a great question. For this week, so I've been working with a new, I guess, trainer, physio. I mean, I have a physio from LA, but this new guy, the last 3-4 weeks has been great. It's something fresh and something new, and we're working on not necessarily different stuff, but it's just new. And for the mindset, it's hard. I mean, I think you can relate to how we are playing in this COVID situation. But right now, I'm in a better place because I'm physically better now. Like, I'm trusting my hip more. Like, I wasn't trusting it as much. So, like, if I didn't get the treatment, I might not, like, physically on the court, I wouldn't trust it, and I don't think I could go 2 hours or 3 hours.
It's interesting, Jason, because both you and Noah are not exactly the biggest guys. You both... I mean, listen, it's fine. No, just because you're 5'1", it's an awkward situation because you guys play long matches. It can take a lot out of you. How have you developed your body from when you entered college out of Torrance, California, and went to Michigan? How has your body developed in that regard to be able to last 2.5-3 hours at this level and beyond?
A lot of work. Every year is different too. Guys come up with new things and new training programs and whatever they're taking. Guys are always improving, and you do need to work that much harder every year. So year after year, it does get tough. I mean, luckily, I have like a core group, not group, but one or two guys like my coach and some physios and trainers that help me and help develop a plan. It's always a matter of whether I'm willing to carry through with it or like if I'm 100% into it. You know, sometimes we might be 75% or 80, which is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
But the plan is always there. It's just whether mentally you're able to go through with it.
Mike usually disagrees with me, so... But I doubt this is going to be the case. When I think Jason Jung, besides my smile that greets me all the time, I think professionalism. That's like the number one thing that I think about. And we actually made a joke. I think I made a joke a few months ago to Mike. I was like, I don't always see Jason face to face, but he somehow is always 110 the world. And I don't know where he is. I don't know what he's doing, but he's always 110 the world. And I'm sure you would like that 110, 120 to be 60, 70. I get that. Yeah. But, you know, where has this consistency come from over your career? I mean, that is pretty incredible in and of itself. And where has that come from?
I think I've always had a strong work ethic. I've always done the work. I think the thing for me is mentally I've not always been in there. I went to college, and a lot of my friends are not in tennis. They're in jobs. They're in startup companies or doing their own thing. So, like, I've always thought about doing something other than tennis. So my mind has always wandered, not a lot, but it has wandered a little bit. You know, when you lose a couple matches or if you're not feeling that well, you might think about the next step, and then you don't commit mentally and spiritually all the way, and it just kind of leads you down a different path. But I've, to answer your question, I'm not really sure. I've always put in the work. I guess the hard work has paid off to be around that ranking, and sometimes I don't look at it that way because, you know, we set our goals. Every time we reach a certain point, we want to go higher. So, I don't really think about it that way where I'm consistently there. Like, I feel like I'm not there yet.
Can I...
return to serve and let's move on. Like, we get it. I hit a flat serve 125 and you go backhand line on my feet and then I lose the point. I go home.
You did have the last win on me though.
Oh, you were exhausted.
At the same time, Jason, I remember you and I had a conversation. It was, not Stockton. What's the other one? Fairfield. I remember broadcasting a couple matches in your first couple years out of college, and I said on the broadcast a couple of times, you know, that you have this great work ethic and you were out there battling every single point, but you had lacked that next level weapon. And I remember having a conversation, it was at the club, one of the second year of Fairfield, and I remember you saying to me pointedly, well, I've got a weapon now. I remember you saying that to me because I think it's like it's something that stuck with you from something that I had said. And I guess that's kind of what I wanted to talk about is how you did develop from being a guy who was very consistent. Your footwork has always been phenomenal. Your speed has always been there. But what has gotten you to that next level where you've been able to compete and be more offensive when you were so defensive and so good at that earlier in your career?
Yeah, I mean, talking about a weapon, I think sometimes we think about weapons as a serve or a forehand, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. Like, we talk about good footworks. I mean, Noah and I have great footwork, and I mean, that's what's won us matches, and I would say that's the weapon. And to reach the next level, I think it's just the mindset and trying to do it over and over again. And you know, obviously it's staying injury free, as we all know. And I think, yeah, for me at least, it's the footwork, but it's also the mindset of being clear on the court, because sometimes, you know, when you're tired, you make bad decisions, and you know, play too much defense, or maybe you're a little tight, you know, then it starts to go the other way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just being more clear about what you're doing.
I think we've asked this question a few times. We've had a few consistent questions that I think we've brought up because of the circumstances that we're in the past 2 years. I think it's making a lot of guys think differently, positively, negatively, all of the above. You know, for somebody at your age, I guess is, you know, really coming into quote unquote peak tennis playing age for a lot of people, what is success for you right now? You know, what does that next 5 to 7 years look like? You know, is that in tennis? Are there outs? You know, what does kind of that whole pathway look like?
Wow, that's a loaded question.
I'm not just an idiot. I'm just short.
Yeah, success for me changes year to year. Mm. I do have goals, like ranking specific goals every year, and obviously the goal is always to reach that top 100 threshold and grand slams, main draws, and all that stuff. I think success, it's a tough tough question, because we think about success as trying to reach this level, and you know, I've been playing for a while now, and success, I try to remind myself of this, but it is hard. You know, success is what we're doing right now, like the work we're putting in, the challenges and all that stuff, and I think that's the success, like the friendships we meet, that we make, and the connections and what we bring to the sport. If, you know, I think everyone brings something to the sport, whether it's good or bad. And I think that's the success on one part. And obviously we can see the success as, you know, a Grand Slam champion and ranking and all that stuff. So, I don't know if I answered the question.
No, I think for you, especially, I'm curious because I'm learning myself. Mike doesn't need to learn anything because his back end's awful. But I think just understanding from players that have, you know, walk similar paths. Everybody has a different one, but walk similar paths. And what does that look like? Where does that enjoyment come from? And what does that 5 years look like where you get out of the sport and you're like, you know what? I put everything into it. I feel really good about myself. Okay. I don't regret anything. You know, I just, I'm always curious about what, you know, people's perspectives are on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you're right about, you know, everyone's got their own path. And yeah, I mean, in the next 5 years, okay, so 2 months ago, or maybe less than that, like a month ago, I was in a pretty dark place. It's been a tough year since coming back to U.S. Open and all that stuff until now. It's been very, very tough, more mentally and emotionally. Like, physically I was hurt, but then just more emotionally. And I was talking to my coach, and this was 3 weeks ago before I left for some warm-up tournaments for French. And he was like, look, like, listen, if you want to quit now, I don't think that's a great idea, because you're not quitting for the right reasons. Like, if you're committed to this year, which you are, like, I've committed to play this year. And if you are committed, you need to give it everything you have. And that's what, so like 2 years ago, I put in a really hard off season. So 2019, I worked really hard, the hardest I've ever worked. And I actually committed mentally as well. And, you know, I was doing well, and then COVID hit. Mm-hmm. And that kind of just, it threw a lot of people off, but it really hit me hard. And coming back to US Open, my first match, I was up two sets and up 4-0, and I lost. And I think that really just, that was a killer for me.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I mean, I just have to put, like, success for me, and to feel like I had success is just putting all my chips on the table and putting everything down, more mentally, I think. I keep saying mentally because I do put in the work on and off the court. That's never been a question. It's just more about my headspace.
Mm. Yeah, it was funny because I think pre-COVID, that's when you did again second, or maybe there was a middle year of at the New York Open. And I was feeling good pre-COVID as well. And I think that's a lot of people that actually in our circle coincidentally kind of had 2020 as a very exciting year for them. They were prepared, and, you know, this is no fault to anybody, but COVID striking, I think, put a damper on a lot of people and tested them and said, hey, if you're ready now, you better be ready in a year or a year and a half, because that's how long we're going to be. And I think that has kind of been a defining moment for a lot of people at this, you know, whether that's saying, hey, I'm not ready for this, or this is not the time, or, you know, we're just going to keep this going.
If I can, to build off of that, Jason, for you, I mean, again, you've done this for 8 years, full-time, ten full-time now. You got to spend more time with family and friends. Did that part kind of just seem appealing to you? The fact that you've kind of missed out on some of these things over the last 10 years, and God, now I've had a 6 months, whatever it was, to do it. And my God, like, this is how the other half lives.
I actually spent more time with family, not friends.
Okay.
Try not to see any of my friends.
Right.
During that time, the first 2-3 months, you didn't really think too much of it.
Yeah.
Like, the tennis part, you weren't, at least for me, like, I wasn't worried about it. I wasn't thinking about it. And it was nice to spend time with family.
Yeah.
But when they said U.S. Open was going to be back on, everyone got pretty excited.
Yeah.
I mean, I got excited, and I started working really hard. It was more of the training became a little bit different because you couldn't see everyone. My physio in L.A., I couldn't really see. The training was kind of on my own. Mm. So there were some injuries that started to come up, and it just wasn't the same. So that was difficult.
So then what in the last few weeks do you think has changed and helped you get back to at least a path in terms of getting back to that headspace that you expect from yourself?
I would just say my coach talking some sense into me. I mean, it's... no one knows my coach, Oliver.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a strong personality and... And he, you know, we have, he's my guy that, you know, if something is off or if I, you know, those Snickers commercial, you know, like, it's like one of those things where I just needed a Snicker.
Well, I have obviously had too many Snickers, but that's a different story altogether. It's okay. I made the fat joke for you, Noah. Don't worry.
Thank you.
In terms of success, I don't think I've ever gotten to actually talk to you about this. The change of nationality.
That was my next question, loser.
To you.
Wow, you guys are on the same page. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're separated by 35 years, but we've got the same brain. It's very weird. How much... What did that provide for you? And I guess the big picture question for me, Jason, is do you think you would have had the same level of success in terms of the rankings and all of that had you stayed under the American flag?
Those things are very hard to say. It's if I were to answer that, I would say no, just because I wasn't really on the radar anymore. Like growing up in the juniors, I was sort of on the radar like before college. But during college, I didn't produce the results that were expected of my recruiting class or ranking. And I think most people know the story that I didn't play tennis. You know, when I graduated, I took the job and everything. Yeah. And so like I wasn't... No one was really looking for me or providing support. So that was number one. But since I've lived in LA for most of my life, I would go out to Carson and train. And it just didn't feel... I mean, look, USTA has helped me when I was a junior, but after that, not so much. Mm-hmm. So like I would go out there and pretty much hit with anyone... or whoever they would give to me, juniors or WTA players or, you know, ATP players, anything that they wanted to do on their agenda, like I was their hitter.
Yeah.
And I didn't receive any wild cards to this day. The only wild card I've ever received is for the Newport, Rhode Island tournament.
Wow.
Yes, and that's from Todd Martin.
Okay.
So
Big Ten related, Northwestern and Michigan there.
Yeah, so that's no wild card in the futures or anything. So yeah, it's to answer your question today, I don't think I would have had the success. It's not like I received wild cards from Taiwan because they only have two challengers and my ranking was high enough by then. But it was more of the financial support because, you know, this sport is expensive if you want to. You can't do it alone. That's the bottom line. You need the coaches and the physios, the trainers, and traveling is expensive. So from a financial perspective, that helped a lot.
Well, that's kind of where I was going because, you know, I think so many players in your ranking level, if you go from, say, 100 to maybe even down to 400, if they have that influx of cash and have that just kind of that little bit of stability, it can provide so much. And I'm just wondering if you have felt that, just that little bit of stability so that you at least had that comfort and it allowed you to work with a little bit of freedom.
Yeah, for sure. It helps a lot. I mean, you don't have to... I'm a guy that doesn't like to... Even when I was playing in the futures... Mm-hmm. There were some guys who would travel with, you know, $500 in their bank account, you know, waiting on the next, you know, I got to get to the quarterfinals so I can pay for this next flight. So, like, I'm not that guy.
Right.
So, like, I need to see some sort of financial support and then, you know, like, I can hire the people I need to hire.
Yeah. So it's very business of you.
That helps.
All right. So
yeah, Mike's been supporting me, and I just feed him alcohol. just get him Bloody Marys.
But enough about my Sunday night. So your friendship with Evan King.
Yep.
You are two rather different individuals. You are rather deliberate, and there's thought. He seems to be just going on his own free, spirited trip through life, man. And I respect both of you immensely. I've known both of you immensely through Big Ten ties. Walk us through that friendship and relationship as best you can over the years.
Yeah, so not many people know this. I don't know if my head coach during the time at Michigan even knew this, but after
Bruce Burke,
my
who was at Illinois as well.
Yes, after my sophomore year, I thought about leaving to go to UCLA. And I was really close to leaving, but we had just recruited Evan really hard, and I recruited him heavy too because I knew he was good and he seemed like a good guy. And this was before I was trying to make that decision. Mm. And then he said, "I'm coming to Michigan." And I honestly felt, I mean, he wasn't the only reason, yeah, but I honestly felt really bad if I left.
It was just all guilt.
So this, I'm not sure if I've ever told Evan. I think I have told him this. But that's where it started. So, you know, I ended up staying. And so Evan is ahead in his year. Or he's young for his year.
Yeah.
He came in at 17, I think, and he was... He trained at USTA, so he was on his own. Like, he can handle himself on his own, but he just kind of did his own thing. He mm-hmm. always did his own thing. He was dating a girl that was not in college yet. His first year, she was a senior in high school still, and so he stayed in. I mean, we didn't really see him that much other than the practice courts.
Yeah.
And... We had an interesting relationship in college because he was, I would say he was a bit of a diva. Because
was.
I don't think he is now. Because after that, Bruce kind of saw him as the number one, the guy that was supposed to take over the program. And Bruce kind of gave him anything that he wanted, really. I mean, like, just gave him a lot of leeway in what he wanted to do. And Evan just kind of didn't care.
Yeah.
And he just showed up, and it's not like he was partying or doing bad things. He just, sometimes he just didn't care. And in practice, we would play sets. Sometimes we play sets, and if I broke him, he'd kind of just quit.
Mm.
And it got to a point where I was just like, look, Evan, like, we can't do this anymore if you're going to do that.
Yeah.
And we have a funny story because the school paper was covering us, and he says I called him out on being, like, lazy or something, but I don't remember it, to be honest.
Just being lazy.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Along those lines.
What's it been like since you guys both of you guys have taken breaks? I mean, essentially, after college, he was gone from the sport, was a volunteer assistant in Michigan a little bit. And I'm wondering, has that break for you immediately after college, for him a little bit later as well, has that, I guess, maturity that came along with it, has it helped your relationship, grown that relationship?
I think our relationship grew because we played a lot together on the team. And,
yeah.
And at one point, we were one of the only two guys playing on the tour that played at Michigan. So we bonded over that. And I don't know. I mean, actually, when he first graduated, we played each other. I think one of his first match at Winnetka, we played each other, and he had a match point or something, and then I ended up winning, and he wanted to quit. He legitimately wanted to quit. And we played doubles that tournament as well. So, I mean, I think we've been closer in the last year as well. I mean, he's really matured a lot. Although he doesn't have his driver's license, I am going to call him out right now. I don't know.
Wait, still?
I don't know. Yeah, still. Like, I don't.
Wait. He didn't have it in Tasmania, and that was like 4 years. He didn't get, what is he doing?
Yeah, so the man just turned 29 and he does not have his driver's license.
Okay.
He doesn't live in New York City. You know, he's not, what is this?
No, but I would say he is more mature now, and yeah, as much as he does go with the flow, I do think he has the right intentions and he does have a thought process. Mm-hmm. He doesn't always do it for himself, and I think that goes for everybody. I think Noah can agree, like, if we're coaching someone, we can always tell someone the correct things to do. We may not always do it for ourselves, sure. And I think Evan's been doing that. So, like, Evan actually helped me in Orlando and Tallahassee coaching-wise, and he was great. Like, he helped me out on the court, and he knew the right things, and he would always say, like, I'll tell you the right things, but I may not do it.
That, so when Noah tells me to stop eating all of the Twinkies, you know, that's, I don't listen either.
Is that really a thing, though?
No.
Oh.
There's others.
Well, Jason, it's really been insightful to talk to you. I mean, we've known each other off and on with my Illinois connection for like 13 years now, man. It's
probably older than Noah. No, I'm just kidding, man.
I get it. I am short. I'm young, and I'm Jewish. I know.
Hey, what does the Jewish have to do with anything?
I didn't even say short. I just said you were young. I would take that as a compliment, being young.
Not denying that I'm Jewish.
But I really appreciate it. Good luck these next couple of weeks here in Little Rock in Orlando. It's always fun to catch up with you.
Cool. Thank you.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.